They don't turn out.
Good morning.
Good morning.
The June 25th, 2015 meeting of the Chicago State University Board of Trustees is hereby called to order. Ms. Phillips, will you please take the roll?
Trustee Curtin.
Here.
Trustee Hatch.
Here.
Trustee Joyce.
Here.
Trustee Leak.
Here.
Trustee Smith.
Here.
Trustee Williams.
Here.
Trustee Young.
Here.
Trustee Zoller.
Here.
A quorum exists for the business of the board to begin. Ms. Phillips, will you certify that the notice of this meeting has been given pursuant to the requirements of the Open Meetings Act?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. The meeting notice requirement has been met. Notices were posted 48 hours before this meeting in the Cook Administration, Student Union, and Academic Library buildings.
Our first item is to approve the meetings from the minutes from our May 8th, 2015 board meeting. Are there any comments or corrections to those minutes? If there are no comments or correction, I move that the minutes of the May 8th, 2015 Board of Trustee meeting be approved.
A second.
Trustee Curtin?
Yes.
Trustee Hatch?
Yes.
Trustee Joyce?
Yes.
Trustee Leak?
Yes.
Trustee Smith?
Yes.
Trustee Williams?
Yes.
Trustee Young?
Yes.
Trustee Zoller?
Yes.
At this time, we'll have our president's report.
Sir, I would like to request that I give my report after the executive session, if that's okay?
Certainly. Then we'll begin with the Academic and Student Affairs Report. Trustee Joyce.
I will begin the Student Affairs portion of the meeting. We'll hear from Dr. Angela Henderson.
Yes.
Provost.
Thank you, Trustee Joyce. And good morning, Mr. Chairman, President, and to all the trustees. I'd like to first of all start by saying that we lost a very valuable member of our faculty this month, and I'd like to share that with you. It was Mr. Devin Washington. He was a professor in our Communications, Media, Arts, and Theater program. He died unexpectedly. Our student trustee will say more words about Professor Washington, but on behalf of the faculty and staff in academic affairs, we wanted to salute Professor Washington at the Board of Trustees meeting today and express our condolences to his family. Secondly, this week, our Dean of Students led our students and staff in a candlelight vigil to mourn the loss of the people of the AME Church in South Carolina, and I just wanted to express our condolences on behalf of academic affairs as well. Next, we have two memorandums of understanding with universities. One is international as well as local. And I am going to call Dr. Paula Carney, and if Professor Marion Perkins is present, to talk about our new relationship with Southern University's Law School.
Good morning.
Morning.
My name is Dr. Paula Carney, Assistant Provost, Graduate in Professional Studies. We had a meeting several weeks ago with the interim chancellor of the Southern University School of Law, and are in the process of preparing memorandum of understanding with them. We had a lively meeting, and there are many mutual interests. They are interested in mentoring our undergrads into their law school program, and doing an early enrollment program similar to what we have with John Marshall Law School. And conversely, they are very interested in our online Master's in Library Science program, and particularly when we receive ALA accreditation, and that visit is scheduled for next year. So we're very looking forward to working with them towards enrolling their students into that program as a cohort in fall 2016. So we'll be moving forward with the signing of that later on this summer.
Thank you, Dr. Carney. Are there any questions about the Southern Law Memorandum of Understanding?
Where is Southern located?
Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
Southern has a very strong history in terms of legal defense for some of the major civil rights issues that have taken place throughout the South. Some of the great lawyers have come out of Southern. And I look to the lawyers we have here. If I'm not mistaken, I think did Tom Todd come out of Southern?
Yes, he did, actually.
So we've had some of the great lawyers come out of Southern, and they have a rich and strong history. For us to be able to get this type of an agreement that would give our students a bridge into that law school is just very significant. If you remember 2 months ago, we got the one signed with John Marshall. So now our students will have an option of either bridging to either John Marshall or to Southern. And Southern, when the interim president came up here a week ago when we met with him, he was kind of, very pleased with the fact that he could go up against John Marshall. And he felt as though his school could easily compete, both in terms of quality and in terms of the amount of money that a student would have to pay to go to John Marshall versus Southern. But let me say, as president of Chicago State, I support both universities. They are our stakeholders, and we will drive our students to both universities so that they can get their law degree in a much quicker way.
Thank you.
Yes, and the goal, we actually have a pre-law association, and our students actually reached out to Southern University's Law Center. And the goal is that when students come in and they're interested in law, that they start working on the appropriate courses to be able to get into law school and be successful on the LSAT. So if they identify that they are interested in John Marshall and or Southern, then they can also have some activities in between the 3 and 4 years that they're working on their baccalaureate degree before they actually go down to the law center. So we're hoping that it will encourage more of our students to get into the 3+1 program so that they can matriculate to law school and seamlessly.
And Provost, not to give too much insight, but like some of the discussions that took place at the table of the partner disciplines that student would major in, not cyber.
Cybersecurity, English, business. So we had all of our deans present talking about the opportunities for the students.
They were quite excited about students
library science
law degree and also in cybersecurity. So they are really trying to push the envelope.
Yes. Our next agreement that we'd like to present to you that's actually signed is with between Chicago State University and the University of Brasilia. This particular partnership started a year ago. We sent one of our professors, Dr. Amaker, who's joining me now, Dr. Arthur Amaker. We sent him to Brazil after he wrote a proposal to go over and develop a relationship with the university. He speaks fluent Portuguese, And he spent a month in Brazil last year and spent even more time over this last year cementing our relationship. We now have a signed agreement, and I will turn it over to him to talk to you about the expectations of our relationship or our memorandum of understanding with the University of Brasilia.
Good morning, board.
Good morning.
My name is Professor Arthur Amaker. I'm here to talk about a very exciting agreement that we have now with the University of Brasilia in central Brazil. Brasilia, for those who don't know, is the capital of Brazil and is considered to be the Washington, D.C. of Brazil. So not only is this university situated in the capital, but also we have a lot of access to government agencies there. Myself and Dean Jones went down there this past summer. We met with the Ministry of Education. We met with, of course, the president of the university. The president, Ivan Carmargo, emphasized to us that he wants to make sure this agreement goes somewhere. They've signed agreements before, and they've gone nowhere. So what he told me to do specifically was to talk to the letters department, which is what you see there with you, which is the equivalent of their foreign languages and literatures department. They want to invite me there as a visiting professor to not only work on promoting Chicago State, but also to teach courses to students who are English deficient to get them to come here. We're looking at bringing students here from Brazil in 2016. One of the great things about this program is that they have, the government offers a lot of scholarships right now for Brazilians to study abroad, particularly with the Science Without Borders program. We have students now in Chicago at University of Illinois, at Champaign, University of Illinois, Chicago, but we need some at Chicago State. And so I emphasized to them when I was down there that Chicago State is a great campus. It's a small school, but a strong school. We're located in the city compared to UIC Champaign, and that we have access to the Red Line and that students would be able to travel to different parts of the city, no problem. They were excited. They want to go ahead and have some students, bring some students here by 2016. I'm looking roughly between 10 to 20 students that I can bring here by 2016. Not only do we have this university as a contact, but through the Ministry of Education, we also have contacts with the University of University in Bahia, in the northeast of Brazil, also University of Maranhão, which is also in the northeast of Brazil, and also in Sao Paulo. So, you know, during my stay there in Brazil, I have the capacity to also travel to other parts of Brazil to get us students as well and to promote our international brand. This is cost effective in that, you know, there's plenty of grant money out here on the Brazilian side, particularly to send students here. And every student who comes here, of course, their tuition will be paid for by the Brazilian government. So it's a ripe, opportune time. Also with this exchange, we have possibilities to have department link-ups. The Department of Afro-Brazilian Studies wants to work with our Department of African-American Studies to help develop them, develop an online course in particular. There are a lot of synergies there. Also, we have, in terms of the arts, Palmares Foundation, which is a foundation that's sponsored by the government of Brazil that works specifically with the promotion of Afro-Brazilian culture. They want to work with our film department here, CMAT, in order to try to do interactions with filmmakers and monies and that kind of thing. So there's a lot of interesting and exciting opportunities and synergies with this deal that's beyond just the academic. Oh, this is Mr. Anthony Pritz-McCoy, who came down with us to Brazil. We were able to go out there on a STEM grant. He's going to talk very briefly just about his experience there.
Thank you for meeting me. My name is Anthony Pitts-McCoy. We spoke with a lot of the students while we were in Brazil. And one thing I can say about the students is they were very excited for just the opportunity to come to the United States and study with us. They were very welcoming, very nice to most of the students, and very understanding when we didn't understand Portuguese. But an opportunity like this, they jumped for it. They wanted to know more. They wanted to know how they can get here. And while I was in Brazil, the things that I saw, the university, the professors, the opportunities that those students had, all made me feel like I would love to go to this university. And a lot of students I know here would love the opportunity to travel abroad and study abroad and be able to say that they went on an opportunity like this.
What's your major?
Oh, my major is chemistry. And I met with a couple of the biology students. We presented some of our research there. They also showed us the biology society and how they operate and the interactions they have in between students, as well as they showed us some of the beautiful city that they live in.
Great. Thank you.
I have a question in terms of, could you explain the exchange? I understand we're going to have students from Brazil coming here in 2016. are we having students, how's the exchange part work?
Yeah, well, the first is it's a faculty exchange as well as student exchange. With the student exchange, of course, we'd have to prepare our students in Portuguese. There are opportunities here in Chicago. I explained there's actually a CSU alum who I know who's in my neighborhood who teaches business Portuguese. So maybe we can bring her as an adjunct to work with that. There are also things outside, you know, for preparing for that. Also, we met when we were down there a woman who specifically works with Portuguese for foreigners. Okay, so even when our students go down there, they will have a chance to be trained in that as well. In terms of the faculty exchange, myself and Nelson Inocencio, who's the main partner with this, we would probably be the first exchange to go. Myself down there, then maybe the year after that, Nelson could come up here. Nelson actually is a fine arts professor, but we could probably find something for him to do, teaching Afro-Brazilian culture through African-American studies. Right.
In terms of the exchange, are we going to send students down there, say, for a year, and then they come back and they graduate from Chicago State, or are they going to go there and graduate from Brazil?
They were graduates from Chicago State, right? Yeah.
We're going to map it out, but usually a student goes for a semester and they take a course that will be acceptable for graduation here and then vice versa. Some of the students, like our students who come from India, they enroll in a full degree program, and so they stay here for the full 2 years. So we have the potential to do quite a bit of that, but our first phase, we want to have the students learn a year of Portuguese here and then go down there for a semester and or a year. We're working on grants, so financially we can make that work, but minimally a year or a summer, and then vice versa. And then with the faculty exchange, we would pay for their faculty member to come here and live on campus, or they could receive a stipend, and then they would pay for our faculty member to go there. So now that we have a signed agreement, Dr. Amaker and Dr. Kelly Ellis is the chairperson of English. Dr. Ellis, will you please stand? She's the chair of our English department. We're going to sit down and really work on the next 2 years of what we plan to do with this memorandum of understanding, so it won't sit on the shelf. So we want our students to experience Brazil, and we want the students from Brazil to experience Chicago State.
Could you identify some of the other countries that we're sending students to right now? This is something that we really have made a priority in terms of everything from Salzburg to the CERN.
Yes, actually, Switzerland. We have students who visited CERN once again, Switzerland, with Dr. Garcia to study chemistry and physics. We have sent students to the Philippines, to Kenya, Brasilia. I'm trying to think of, our students have gone all over the country. Ghana, we have students in Ghana right now. We have 5 students working in a work study program. They're receiving credit, they're seniors, and they are actually working for businesses in Ghana. So,
Salzburg.
Last year we sent 3 faculty to Salzburg, and they spent a week with other faculty from around the world talking about, they talk about one issue that impacts the world, and then we sent students as well. Dr. Kearney traveled with 4 students last year, and the students had a great experience. Actually, our president of the student government traveled last year, and I believe it was most of their first times out of the country. Thank you. Guatemala, Taiwan.
International brands expanding. That's good.
Actually, France. Our foreign language department takes students to Spain and France every summer to go. They actually participate in the immersion programs throughout the world. So I can actually put together a list and provide a report to the trustees over the last 3 years. Okay.
Thank you. You know, it seems to me that language is the issue. So if it's going to be practically applied, it seems like we ought to offer those languages here, because it's very difficult to study, whether it's science or math or whatever, in another country if you cannot speak the language. Mm-hmm. So it seems like we would inherently have a department here that would earmark those languages, Portuguese, French, and so forth, so the students can take more than 1 year. You know, I do a lot of languages, and it's difficult unless you're spending a lot of time in that language to really do the transfer of the information. So I just wonder about our own language department and how strong it is.
Yeah. Well, I mean, as far as I know, we offer...
I was going to let Dr. Harris speak.
Yeah.
Our foreign language department offers French, and we can very easily offer Portuguese. That's not a problem. We offer Arabic. We offer Chinese. Many African languages, so that wouldn't be an issue for us. We could get somebody on to do that easily. We also have English as a second language classes in the English department for students who come here and need to work on their English. So we've got that, no problem.
Trustee Smith, they're so involved in it and excited about it that they develop clubs on campus and they're interactive with other students and engage them to be a part of taking up foreign languages.
So again, I would tie those to that language specifically. If we're going to have this memorandum, then we ought to offer Portuguese.
And just say one thing about that. When I went to the University of Illinois Champaign to research their program there, they mentioned that any student who, for a student that we have who studies a language that's not popular, like Portuguese, there's scholarship money for them to go to UIC. Right, specifically, right? So they would do if you do a master's degree then in Portuguese or Arabic or Chinese, one of the more less common languages, there's more money for our students. So that would be a way for us to encourage our students to take these languages. Yeah. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
Next item is Dr. Satasha Green, who is our Dean of the College of Education. And she is going to respond briefly to Trustee Leek's idea about connecting with third graders and teaching them how to read or supporting them in their reading endeavors. Dr. Green.
Good morning. I'm Satasha Green, Dean of the College of Education. I provided your report about just the literacy in the Chicagoland area, but also more importantly, identifying some of the programs that already exist at Chicago State University that are really focusing on literacy development and reading development. I'll just briefly talk about some plans for the fall that we are going to do in terms of working with children in CPS. We have identified several of our partner schools that we will do some tutoring and teaching as it relates to evidence-based practices and reading development. We'll do some pre and post to see our impact on the students and try to watch them across several grades. There are already some programs that exist under non-traditional programs under the leadership of Dean Nellie Maynard, who has impacted over 7,000 students already through her program. So Chicago State University has a history of working with the community as it relates to reading development. And I think in your report, it kind of details some of the things that the College of Education will be doing with the community and that we'll continue to do as we look at reading development in the Chicagoland area. Are there any questions about the proposal or the work that we'll be doing in CPS?
I just wanted to say, Mr. Chairman, I was very pleased with the report, a very comprehensive report. I did not know to the extent of what the problem was. I thought I knew, but the report reflected a dimension that I had not was not aware of. So it's, thank you for that. It was well put together, and I appreciate it, and I'm looking forward to being a part that Chicago State would be a part of that process, especially with new leadership coming into CPS now. I think this may, the timing may be right for it.
And I will defer my report on the Higher Learning Commission until the next meeting.
Okay.
The action item is the University of Chicago Medicine 3.
Right. Yes, I'll ask Dr. Marion Mobley-Smith to come up in case you have any questions.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
Dr. Miriam Mobley-Smith, Dean of the College of Pharmacy. The College of Pharmacy admitted its first class in August of 2008. received full accreditation in 2012 and a reaffirmation of that full accreditation in 2014. A big component of the development of a program such as this, particularly from an accreditor's perspective and a quality perspective, is to ensure that all of the students have the ability to develop clinical skills and learn those within an academic medical center environment. As you know, Chicago State University does not own a hospital. We are not a part of an academic medical center, so it behooved us to reach out to find strong partners in those endeavors. We were quite fortunate to be able to find camaraderie at University of Chicago Medicine, which from a logistics perspective is absolutely wonderful because it's right up the street. And so literally we could conduct not only our advanced pharmacy practice experiences there, which comprise the entire fourth year of our program, but also what is called introductory pharmacy practice experiences for the students in their year one through three practice endeavors, because part of those are half a day. And so as students are in didactic courses on the other half of the day, they then easily can move over to other facilities and then continue that particular component. So we embarked upon a relationship with the University of Chicago, which began in the second year of our existence. And we've been building on that, that collaboration ever since. What does it include? All of our students in some form or fashion spend time at the University of Chicago learning about all types of medicine practice, pharmacy practice, and so on with their clinicians, many of whom have taught at other colleges and schools of pharmacy, serving as their mentors, preceptors as we call it, and such. Some of our students are engaged in what we call longitudinal experiences, and they spend pretty much their entire fourth year there at the University of Chicago in preparation for postgraduate experiences. All of the students that are there are engaged in research projects, as all of our students are required to complete a research project prior to graduation, and so they serve as research mentors as well. And particularly interesting and actually noted by our accreditors, many of the clinicians there, particularly in the specialty areas such as cardiovascular medicine, intensive care, or critical care medicine, both surgical as well as medicine, come and teach in our program. And so our students get real world experience, and also not only teach in the therapeutic sequence, but also offer elective courses in those particular specialties. Needless to say, these types of partnerships and collaborations are not free, because it takes time out of the day of the individuals who are employed by the University of Chicago. And so we were able at that time to develop a very comprehensive affiliation agreement and contract with them. What you have in front of you is the second renewal. So this has gone very well. They have not wanted to stop it. They see the advantage. In fact, 3 years ago, our students were very much involved with a national submission that they had for quality and service in terms of patient care, and they were selected for that and gave very high accolades to the role of the students from Chicago State, what they played with us. So this is the second renewal of this contract. It's a 3-year contract. You see the numbers in front of you. It's $225,000 a year for a 3-year renewal. And I'm very, very pleased to bring this forward to you for your approval. We indeed feel, as I said earlier, very fortunate that this is a strong partnership and collaboration with many more years to come. Any questions?
Any questions or comments from board members? Is this the only contract we've had since our pharmacy school opened?
No, we actually have numerous contracts. This is our strongest one in terms of a longitudinal program with an academic medical center, but we have contracts with, and I don't have it all in front of me, so I'm going to go off the top of my head, but Northwestern Memorial Hospital, Rush Medical Center, most of the community pharmacies around, certainly the, when I say community hospitals, community pharmacies as well. We have so many, and we've been very fortunate to be able to do that. In addition, we have faculty members who are placed at many of these academic sites. And so in addition to serving as student educators, clinical educators in those sites, they also provide direct patient care experiences on interprofessional healthcare teams and help to shape the clinical practice there at those particular sites.
Mr. Chairman.
No, I was just saying, Trustee Joyce, you wouldn't see all of the contracts or relationships because many of them are much less than this particular one, but we execute many contracts for the pharmacy department, but they don't always go to the board.
And actually, as we were talking about foreign relationships and so on, we just signed the contract for our first one in the Virgin Islands at the main hospital in St. Croix. And they are very, very excited about having our students start there in the fall. Oh, okay.
I just want to comment. First of all, I want to commend you for this. Clearly, in academia today, many of our students are attracted because the pharmacy program allows them to become a retail pharmacist. But the real issue of education really is research and development and clinical application. So this really is a real niche because you're able to work with subspecialists in various genres. It's very important. Hope to see some of our students then become academic pharmacists and be involved in clinical programs. And this is a real, I think, caveat into that, so I want to commend you for that.
Thank you very much. Actually, the valedictorian of our inaugural class is now a faculty member in oncology at The Ohio State University.
Are there any further comments or questions by board members?
I do have a question. Mm-hmm. It doesn't relate to this contract, so I was just holding off a little bit. You have developed some relationships with Walgreens, I know.
Mm-hmm.
Is it possible that they could open a small pharmacy on campus?
That's a good question. I do have an answer, but I don't necessarily want to go on record with it at this point. We can have an off discussion. There are a number of tentacles involved. I'll leave it at that.
Okay. I would like to have that conversation because I think that we should give them the opportunity to put a pharmacy here. If not, maybe we'll have to look at some other pharmacies.
Now, are you aware there is a Walgreens right across the street?
I am not.
Okay.
Okay, well, that answers that question. Oh. Okay,
yeah, right there at 95th and King. I will say
that. I come
that,
from the east.
Oh, it's okay. It's okay. It's one of the tiny tentacles. Oh. But nevertheless, what we've done with them, along with student placements, is in the fall when we provide the Jazzing Healthy as a part of Jazz in the Grass, the big community health program that we do, the pharmacists from Walgreens there, they come over and provide flu and pneumonia immunizations as a part of the program. So we do have a very strong relationship with that particular site. Some of the pharmacists are on our advisory councils and so on. So a quickie. We think ultimately it would be a good idea to have a small pharmacy on campus, but we want to tie it to the wellness center. And immunizations and other things are a part of it. Plus, because of the focus on nutrition and other types of preventive health issues, working collaboratively with the College of Health Sciences and the Department of Nursing in particular is very important for us as the movement towards more interprofessional education and interprofessional team-based care is a component not of only quality healthcare delivery, but also educating the future healthcare professional. And so definitely that is on the books in terms of looking at where we'll go from there. But part of it is we have to make a decision about if it's going to be an educational focus more so than a revenue generating center. Because a goodly number of pharmacies that are located at universities don't make money. So when we are clear about how that is and what we need to do about it, then that also helps with the decision. So it's multifaceted, and that's why I didn't want to go into it a lot, but there's a kind of a piece.
We're also building a virtual hospital in the where the College of Pharmacy is, and so the plan is that the College of Health Sciences will be in that building, and our Wellness Center will go into that building, and as a part of our plans, that we would have a pharmacy component in the Wellness Center, as Dean Mobley-Smith is speaking about, so that our students could have didactic experiences on campus as a part of the virtual simulation hospital, as well as off campus at the medical centers and the community hospitals and the local pharmacies.
Sounds great. Thank you. Thank you, Phil.
If there are no further questions or comments, is there a motion?
So moved.
To vote on the resolution, University of Chicago Medicine 3-year contract resolution. So moved.
Second.
Trustee Curtin?
Yes.
Trustee Hatch?
Yes.
Trustee Joyce?
Yes.
Trustee Leak?
Yes.
Trustee Smith?
Yes.
Trustee Williams?
Yes.
Trustee Young?
Yes.
Trustee Zoller?
Yes.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Our next resolution is the 2015-2016 Student Health Insurance Rate Increase Resolution. I'll ask Dr. Lisa Young to come up to answer any questions and speak about the resolution.
Good morning, trustees. Again, morning. My name is Dr. Lisa Young. I'm representing the Wellness and Health Center, and I'm the interim chairperson for the Department of Nursing. This year, every year, we have a renewal for our student health insurance. We have mandatory student health insurance on our campus, as most colleges and universities do. And we've had this long before the Affordable Care Act has come into play. The difference is that now students, they have choices. With the Affordable Care Act, they can go to the marketplace or they can stay under their parents' insurance until they're 26 years old. But then there's some students, because we serve an older population, that may not want to pay every month for their insurance. They want to take it out of their financial aid. Or so they have to waive out. So the mandatory health insurance is billed to everybody who has 12 hours or more for undergraduates, 9 hours for graduates, and 6 for doctoral students. They all are billed for the student health insurance. They have to waive out, show that they're on their parents, show that they have some other form of insurance, just as the federal government does. That increase this year is going up to $144, which is a year, which is a percentage of what they had before. It's a 12% increase. And that being because, as you know, with health with any insurance, it has to do with your pool. It has to do with the number of people in the pool, the risk, the usage of the plan. And the plan, because of the options with the Affordable Care Act, we had, like, last fall, we had 919 students enrolled. And in the spring, it was 808, because the Affordable Care Act kicked in and students were able to, you know, go to take other insurances. Now, if for some reason the Supreme Court reverses that, then it'll probably go back up, because then students will want to go back into the plan because they don't have any health insurance. We have about 4 children of students who take the plan, and we have, in addition, 10 of their spouses who are also enrolled in the plan. So this that's presented to you today is just to let you know that they're having an increase, and the students do have the option, but that it will have to be part of their tuition. It's different here than, like, some of the other universities, where their tuition does not reflect these costs. Ours reflects the cost and the tuition, but they can waive out of it. Are there any questions?
Any questions or comments?
You said $144 a year?
Yes, for the year.
That was an increase.
The increase. I am so sorry. Last year was $1,142 for the year, and then for this year, it's going to be $1,286. It's offered by United Healthcare, and our students opted last year to go to, as you know, there's 3 levels of insurance: gold, silver, and bronze. Our students last year elected that they wanted to stay with the gold or go to the gold, rather, I should say, and they wanted 90% coverage with 10% out of pocket. So they were very health conscious students.
Is that a PPO or an HMO?
It's a PPO.
It is.
Yeah, they can go wherever they want. If they go to the health center, their deductible is waived when they go to the health center because they're serving on campus. It serves as their primary care.
Just in passing, the Supreme Court just passed 6-3 that Obamacare stands as is.
Great.
Just now, huh?
6-3
Good. Dr. Young, we want to thank you for that great coverage for students because many of the older non-traditional students need that coverage and they're able to cover their spouses and children as well. So yeah. Thank you and your efforts.
And I want to, there's one other part of that that's really good for our students is because when they register in the spring, that same price that they pay in the spring covers them from January to August. So that's very cost effective for the graduate student who doesn't have a job or doesn't have any insurance. It gives them time to get a job and be covered under their insurance.
Any further questions or comments? If not, do I hear a motion to approve?
So moved.
Second.
Health insurance plan?
Second.
Trustee Curtin? Trustee Curtin?
Yes.
Trustee Hatch?
Yes.
Trustee Joyce?
Yes.
Trustee Leak?
Yes.
Trustee Smith?
Yes.
Trustee Williams?
Yes.
Trustee Young?
Yes.
Trustee Zoller?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Doctor.
Thank you so much.
Our final resolution is requesting the board to accept one of our largest grants at the university. It's a 2.5 evidence-based trauma grant. I am asking Dr. Rashid and Dr. Canis to please come up. Dr. Rashid is the PI of the grant to answer any questions regarding the grant and to present the resolution. Dr. Rashid.
Thank you very much for the opportunity to present this grant again. My name is Dr. Mikhail Rashid. I'm chair of the social work program. And some background, in 2007, the Illinois Department of Children and Family Services approached our department to help them to develop a trauma-informed child welfare system. I say the reason why they approached us because our particular orientation in our program is trauma-informed, strength-based, family-centered. And that was quite congruent with their particular thrust at that time. So they approached us to help them to develop, as I said, a trauma-informed program or trauma-informed child welfare system. And that was in 2007. Since that time, it's not really morphed into, but it has three program components. Two of them are strictly workforce development components. One is called Implementation Support, or the IS program. And that program is geared toward working with child welfare workers, new child welfare workers, to really help them to really cement a trauma-informed practice. So we have about eight staff statewide who go and work with the various child welfare offices to really help the staff to really begin to integrate and implement a trauma-informed child welfare practice. The second workforce component is what we call a supervisory training enforcement program. That is to really train supervisors to be more effective in supervising their staff in this trauma-informed perspective. So that's the second component. A new component that came online 3 years ago, it's called the IB3 program, infant to three-year-old program, because we know that in the child welfare system, one of the most vulnerable populations are infants, and infants from infancy to 3 years old. So in this particular initiative, we joined forces with the University of North Carolina, University of Chicago, and developed a basic research program to look at what are some of the best practice models to work with this most vulnerable population. And also in this, for the coming year, we'll be working with the court system as well to have a whole system of care for this particular population. And this is a 5-year initiative. It's funded by Title IV E federal Title IV-E, and in that particular initiative, it's nationwide, but for Illinois, there are only about four or five other states that are involved in this. But again, looking at how to develop best practice intervention models for this particular population. So that's where we are right now with this program, and we're requesting for the board to approve the grant for fiscal year 16 for $2.5 million. Are there questions?
How many years have we had this grant?
Since 2007.
Since
2007. We have 25 employees right now. Initially, we thought that it would be a three-year grant, but because of the success of that, DCFS has continued to support that. And we anticipate ongoing, because we have really become a part of the whole child welfare system in terms of this trauma-informed perspective. One would take for granted that social workers and other human service child welfare workers are trauma-sensitive, but we found out that they really weren't. And that in working with them, I think we've had a profound impact on really kind of shifting the kind of the paradigm there in child welfare to a trauma-informed perspective.
Doctor, when you say we have 25 employees, that's university employees or part of this particular program?
They're part of this program, but they are university employees on this grant. So they're employees from year to year. But they come under CSU personnel policies, everything that's related to CSU policies they are under. But again, they're supported by a grant from year to year.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman, I'm interested that you keep using the term trauma evidence. Mm-hmm. Are you saying that these persons are being trained to recognize trauma?
Trained to recognize trauma.
Therapy.
Exactly. Trained to recognize trauma. Children who are in the system, have been traumatized from their family, and being put in the child welfare system is traumatic as well. And there are certain kinds of indicators of the impact of trauma on children who are in the system. And even though the child welfare system has been around for some years, they haven't really given recognition to the whole impact of trauma, how it impacts the brain, how it impacts relationships, how it impacts development. There's a whole body of research that's come out that really speaks to that. And I think the workers in DCFS have not been that sensitive to the kind of evidence base that supports the impact of trauma.
Because it seems to me that when you read the papers, the real issue, of course, is the science of what happens. I think we're all in favor of that, but is that the workers are so overloaded. I wonder if there's an assessment tool so that every child is assessed for trauma. If you're gonna really make a difference, you want to assess every case. Mm-hmm. There are parameters to look at, as you said, to try to find out about that child. It seems like that the system is so overloaded that these workers spend so little time. I looked at a few years ago how much time the workers spend with these cases to assess them. It's a few minutes. So I just wonder, is there a universal system where you are using parameters that every child must be assessed by and therefore would trigger an investigation or trigger therapy for that child, or how is it really applied?
There is an assessment protocol, assessment tool that's used. But I think, once you do the assessment, what do you do after that?
Right.
And I think that one of the areas that we have been working on is what do you do after that? Because making the transition from knowing what the issues are to developing intervention strategies to address those issues and deal with permanency planning concerns around these kids as well is the important aspect that we have begun to address. Well aware that the system is quite overloaded, an increasing number of children who have been traumatized and victimized by their families, by the community, by other factors as well. So again, what do you do after you know what the problem is? Is what we're working on, and helping the workers there to really know what to do once they know what the problem is. Mm-hmm. And helping the supervisors to supervise those, we're involved in that as well.
That's great, thank you.
Are there any further questions or comments from trustees? If not, is there a motion made to vote on the evidence-based trauma practice resolution?
So moved.
Second.
Trustee Curtin?
Yes.
Trustee Hatch?
Yes.
Trustee Joyce?
Yes.
Trustee Lake?
Yes.
Trustee Smith?
Yes.
Trustee Williams?
Yes.
Trustee Young?
Yes.
Trustee Zoller?
Yes.
The motion has passed.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Zach.
Next, we have enrollment management.
Good morning, trustees, chairman.
Good morning.
For the record, my name is Cherie Sidney, and I'm the Associate Vice President of Enrollment Management. I want to start by giving the overall enrollment projections as to where we are. Currently, compared to this point in time last year, our enrollment reflects a 4% increase. Our new graduate student enrollment is up by 22%. Our new transfer enrollment is up by 6%. New Hispanic student enrollment is up by 8.3%, and overall Hispanic enrollment is up by 24.5%. Again, all information that I'm giving you is compared to the same point in time last year. New male student enrollment is up by 3.1% compared to this point last year, and overall male enrollment is up by 11.6%. Our deans and chairs, student affairs, and advisors are to be commended. Our retention efforts are working. Returning students' enrollment is up by 6% compared to this point in time last year. We are continuing to drive our enrollment initiatives across the campus to meet the university enrollment goals.
And again, for the record, this is Dr. Paula Carney, Assistant Provost for Graduate and Professional Studies. So as an example of that, we get daily reports. I translate two of those reports into actionable items for colleges and programs. Once a week, I send out a student-by-student form that includes students who have initiated but not completed applications, and students who have been newly admitted but not yet registered. And then the deans and the programs review that and interact with prospects and with admitted students to convert them into complete applications or registered students. Enrollment management research shows that for a student who isn't receiving a full ride in graduate school, that the primary reason for selecting a school is the relationship developed with someone in the faculty or someone in the program. So we're trying to maximize the building of those relationships and convert applicants into admitted students and enrolled students. The second report that I send out every other week is the student persistence report. And again, at the program level, calls are made to encourage students to register so that we can sort of move the curve, the registration curve, towards early registration.
Our classes for fall start August 24th. Our reporting census date is September 26th. We have 57 days left in our reporting census. So with initiatives like Dr. Paula Carney described, as well as working with students who are prevented from registering with Pass Due Balance, which is an initiative we're working on right now, veterans outreach, partnering with local communities, we are again continuing to drive our enrollment initiatives. As per the board's request, I have provided you with an enrollment update based on the goals that were established. In the previous board meeting, we stated that while we are projecting flat, we have an internal goal of 3%. The report you see before you reflects those goals as well as where we are in our current enrollment. In addition to the enrollment report, I want to add a couple of things. As Provost and the Academic Affairs team is working to put the footprint of CSU on the map for external locations, internally we are also making a footprint. As you read my board report, Ms. Obama was here on campus speaking at the graduation for King High School. Last night, we had our second day of Jazz in the Grass, and we had over just over 500 community members on campus. And tonight, we'll be hosting the Black Caucus legislative event regarding the budget cuts. That's part of that initiative. As we create an awareness around who CSU is, those opportunities provide us the opportunity to showcase our educational abilities. Are there any questions regarding the report?
Yes, this may seem an unnecessary question based on your report, but are you confident that we have stopped the sliding downward and that we may be flat because our goal is to increase by 3%? But of course, as you know, the Board of Trustees is very concerned that we stop the sliding downward trend. Are you confident that we are now past that point?
I am confident that we are doing everything that we can to do, that everything that we can do to stop that. I think that we've got practices, policies, initiatives put in place to get to our flat number as well as exceed it in maybe some of the other categories.
Okay, thank you.
I have a question. From the handout, and I must be reading it wrong, on the proposed fall 2015 goals versus the actual fall 14. And the numbers I'm reading is the actual fall 2014 was 2293 in arts and sciences, and that the proposed is 2362. So you're projecting an increase in arts and sciences. Is that correct? So I'm confused by the last number of 1048.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The actuals are where we are as of 624, so the actual number. So we expect to have 2362, that number, enrolled in the College of Arts and Sciences, and to date we have 1,039.
My point, you're going to have to go up 1,200 students to get to that.
No. Yes, yes. So right now we're actively, we have students enrolled in, we have three summer school terms. Mm-hmm. So we have 2 5-week terms and an 8-week term. So many of our students are enrolled in summer school. And unfortunately, many of our students work over the summer to get their tuition, and our biggest weeks are in August when students actually enroll. That's the tradition. So based on history, when the associate vice president stated that we were up 4%. Mm-hmm. That's as compared to last year, and that's as a result of us working with the students to get them enrolled before they leave campus and during the summer, because traditionally that's what most college students do.
So you're confident in those three sections you're going to have 1,200 students?
Yes, with our college. Yes, right. Yes. For the fall.
I feel better.
Yes.
And that's a lot of students. The challenge is that Chicago State has a culture, it's a culture,
last
of students not registering until the very last minute, until right there when registration starts in August. Most universities, and I'm familiar with what you're familiar, mm-hmm. the students, you know 80% of your student body before, in April. Okay. One of the challenges at Chicago State is to change that culture. And we are slowly changing it. But it is a cultural change.
I understand.
And Trustee, just to add to that, I reviewed a report yesterday that had 1,500 students on there with past due balances. Those students, due to our policies, and they are strong policies, they can't register. And so that's why we're working with that population of students to get those issues fixed so that they can register and complete their degree, because a lot of them are seniors.
If I might add, we reviewed a list of graduate students with past due balances. One student had a 2-cent balance, 2 cents, okay. And couldn't register. So
no, No, we changed that policy. So, the balance is below $200, the student can register.
Okay.
But
that was one of the barriers.
That was. Yeah, but that policy had
so
to be changed.
So, cultural and policy.
I also want to share that many of our programs are signature programs. You have to apply to get in. And so recently, I know pharmacy has started to let their students, they've selected their class and they may have some seats left. Then we have nursing and occupational therapy was just selected. We have counseling. So many of our programs that require application and acceptance, then students often don't actually enroll for their courses until they come on campus later in the summer or the fall. Also, freshmen can't register without attending our orientation in the summer. So we had our first orientation last week. We have three orientations throughout the summer. So they can sign up for one of them. So we expect our freshman numbers to increase based on those orientations.
And would you please just tell, even though we know, would you please tell us the story of the young man who selected Chicago State University with the 32?
Daniel.
Yes.
Daniel. Daniel was part of our president's breakfast, and Daniel applied for admission at Chicago State. Daniel is from Joliet. His mom works at Joliet Community College. Daniel was offered a $12,000 scholarship. His ACT score is 32, and when we asked Daniel why CSU, he raved about our CMAT program. He said he studied it. This is where he wanted to be, and right now he's just contemplating whether or not he wants to stay in the dorms. But him and his mother have been up here at least three times now because they are just so excited about Daniel starting his academic career here at CSU.
That's fantastic.
Tell the story. He's going to tell those stories.
Yes. I also want to share that when we had the opportunity to meet the First Lady, Michelle Obama, one of the first things that came out of her mouth is that she got her first academic start at Chicago State University. And so I asked her, what did that mean? And she said that she attended Chicago State, had a seventh and eighth grade academic program and an enrichment program, and she was a part of it. And she said to me, use it. You know, she said, I got my start here. And so, of course, the president used that in his remarks. I'm at the King graduation, and then we also had an opportunity to give a scholarship to a young lady who was graduating from King High School, and we awarded her a scholarship during the ceremony, and she was so excited. I was like, wow. She started crying, and so it was really good because her peers got an opportunity to see that she valued Chicago State and wanted to attend Chicago State, and we're looking forward to having her here. She's a pre-med student, and she wants to be a doctor, and so we're looking forward to her graduating in 4 years.
The First Lady re-emphasized. She stated it once, and then when it was stated to the total audience, she then restated again. She said, Wayne, use that.
Yep.
So,
advertise it.
So we're trying to figure out how we can, in the appropriate way,
appropriate. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mark. And a lot of students are very excited about our CMAP program, and a lot of our students hear the great stories that we share with them about Dr. Devin Washington, who has passed away, but thank God for Dr. Liz, who's still there, and of course, Herb Kent, Troy Tyler, V103 Clear Channel, and the great relationship that we have with Clear Channel that attracts a lot of the inner city students to the program. But I want to also thank you, VP of Enrollment, for the EAF summer opportunities for the students, because without that, many of the students would not return to Chicago State because they have a balance. But that EAF, that summer 2015 EAF, has been a great blessing to many of the students, and to VP Muscadet for the scholarships that were offered as well for the students. I want to thank you immensely for that great opportunity. And many of our students are learning and understanding that along with your academic endeavors, that you also have to work part-time. And they're learning that, and this is a growing process, and they're learning that. So thank you.
Being that we're talking about CMAT, mm-hmm. Everybody should be aware, because we're talking about study abroad. When you go down to Brazil, you can listen to CSU, to our CSU radio station while you're in Brazil.
Yes.
If you're over in the CERN, if you're over in Salamanca, we worked out, and what was it, 2 years ago, 3 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
We worked out with Clear Channel, where they were going to charge us like maybe $250,000, where we would have iHeartRadio. Long story short, at the end of about a year of negotiation, they ended up giving it to us for $12,000. So you can now hear any place in the world. You go to France, you go to Spain, you can hear CSU radio through iHeartRadio. And I mean, it is clear. It is clear. And that's through our, and that's our CMAT,
yes,
programs. And our students have radio programs that are constantly going.
Mm-hmm.
So you can hear the latest news, you can hear what's happening on campus, you can hear, we sometimes do our basketball games,
volleyball games,
you know,
yes.
So.
And if you have your iPod and you're working out, you can just put CSU iHeart in, you can Google it, and then you actually can pull it up on any of your devices and have it with you wherever you are.
And being a 35-year radio veteran from WBEZ, National Public Radio, and WVON, I get a great joy in working with the students in CMAT. You know, that's where I really am happy, and that's where I'll be returning after I finish my course here.
And I want to give credit to Clear Channel. Not only did they do that with us with the iHeartRadio in terms of helping us, but they also gave us equipment that allowed us. So Clear Channel has really, really stepped up in an absolute major way to making our CMAT program, you know, one of the leading ones.
We haven't let them go, have we? Clear Channel.
No.
We hold on to them.
Oh. Very much so. Very much so. Yes.
Well, thank you, Ms. Sidney, and Provost Henderson, and Dr. Carney.
Thank you.
This then concludes the Academic and Student Affairs Committee report.
Thank you.
We will now have our Finance and Audit Committee report. Trustee Zoller.
I'm going to ask Mr. Pinkleton if he'll come forward, please. Mr. Pinkleton, as you know, you've had a very challenging last 6 months trying to forecast where we might be in this new environment of budget cutting. So would you please give us your report under the circumstances?
Thank you, Trustee. Good morning, Mr. President, Mr. Chairman. Distinguished trustees, for the record, my name is Larry Pinkleton, Vice President, Administration and Finance for Chicago State University. First off, I'd like to draw your attention to a one-page form that you should all have in front of you, which is the university's cash position report. And then I'll have two resolutions to discuss after that report. Looking at the university's current cash position, we have approximately $19.5 million in the bank, and our restricted cash figure currently totals approximately $2.1 million, leaving an unrestricted cash position of approximately $17.4 million. Looking at activity over the next 90 days, in terms of our cash projections, collections, we are anticipating approximately $47.2 million. Expenditures over that same time period, approximately $45.3 million. And if you factor in the unrestricted cash position, our projected collections, and our expenditures, we are anticipating a balance remaining of approximately $19.3 million. And then in anticipation, in a worst case scenario, if we were not to receive any of the state appropriations over that time period, we would still be positive with an estimated balance of approximately $7.3 million. In terms of the status of our fiscal year 15 state appropriation, we have a state appropriation that is $38.2 million. And looking at all payments that have been received to date from the state, We have received approximately $27.8 million, which represents 73% of our budget. I was on a call yesterday with CFOs across the state, and they had just, some of them had made representations of information that had come our way from the Governor's Office of Management and Budget, and they are targeting the June 30th time period to have all the state universities have approximately have received approximately 80% of their budget. And so we hope between now and next Tuesday, close of business, that there'd be another payment that would come our way, which would push the 73% figure up to an estimated 80% figure by year end. And so what that suggests is that we will transition into fiscal year 16 with some portion of our fiscal year 15 state appropriation outstanding. Historically, that is, the history does suggest that that's a normal practice. And we'll be looking, obviously, to try to minimize the impact. But as we push into fiscal year 16, we will have a residual balance from 15. And then finally, just looking at expenditures that we have billed to the state as it relates to our total state appropriation, we've billed approximately 95% of our state appropriation to the state asking for reimbursement.
Mr. Pinkleton?
Yes.
You have a line under short-term cash projection, direct loans, $22 million. Mm-hmm. What are direct loans, please?
Direct loans are loans that are made to the students, okay, in response to their financial aid package, alternatives that they have available to them to help cover tuition and fees.
Thank you.
Are there any?
When will we bill the other 5%, by the way?
As soon as the expenses has been incurred.
Incurred. Okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
Any other questions concerning the university's cash position? Okay, moving on. I have two resolutions for the Board of Trustees consideration today. The first is addressing the fiscal year 16 budget. On a preliminary basis, we are in what I'll characterize as the second phase of our fiscal year 16 time period in terms of building the budget, where we are asking for a preliminary budget to allow the university to engage in operations effective July 1. To date, we have incorporated assumptions around enrollment growth, tuition rate increases that were approved in prior Board of Trustee meetings, in addition to tuition and waiver estimates, along with current estimates for grants and contracts. And so if you look at Exhibit A in your packet relative to the fiscal year 16 budget request, we have four categories that we're bringing forward with detail that revolve around the university's Education Assistance Fund, the university's income fund, which is basically just tuition and fees, non-appropriated unrestricted funds, and also non-appropriated restricted funds. The total of our preliminary estimates for the fiscal year 16 time period is approximately $105 million. So the university would like to have a motion dealing with approving the fiscal year 16 preliminary budget at $105 million.
I have a question. The university income fund, at what rate of enrollment was the assumption to come up with that number?
The university has taken a conservative stance in building the fiscal year 16 budget with having enrollment brought forth as flat. So the planning assumption is enrollment is flat. As ABP Sydney indicated earlier in her report, there are targeted growth numbers on a category by category basis for tuition and enrollment that is greater than zero. But from a planning standpoint, we brought forth the assumption at zero. Any questions concerning fiscal year 16's budget request?
Any other questions or comments by the board? If not, Mr. Chairman, may we ask for a motion?
I move that we approve the 2016 preliminary operating budget.
Second.
Trustee Curtin?
Yes.
Trustee Hatch?
Yes.
Trustee Joyce?
Yes.
Trustee Leak?
Yes.
Trustee Smith?
Yes.
Trustee Williams?
Yes.
Trustee Young?
Yes.
Trustee Zoller?
Yes.
Second resolution for the board's consideration today revolves around the fiscal year 17 operating and capital budget request. This is the second phase of the planning process that we participate on an annual basis with the state, where we give them a preliminary look around what our fiscal year 17 request would be. Looking at the detail associated with that request, the university has participated in several discussions at the operations team level, having been reviewed by the university's budget committee, and then subsequently brought forth with a recommendation today, where we are asking for the state to consider a total of $7.2 million that would be incremental to whatever state appropriation base number that they will consider for fiscal year 17. So again, these would be items that would be above and beyond what we consider to be our normal state budget request going into that time period. Are there any questions concerning the operating ask for fiscal year 17? Yes.
You're asking for 2017 for an increase?
That's correct. It largely, and I can appreciate the inherent sarcasm in your question, sir. this is one of those things where the university wants to bring forth the request, recognizing that the probability of success is low. But just like on an annual basis, we don't ask for the state to take away money from CSU. We want to continue our strategy of making the request known. And if, you know, if the gates open up at one point in time and the sun shines down on CSU, maybe we'll get a portion of this $7.2 million. Okay. The second part of the resolution deals with capital. There are three components to the capital request that we're bringing forth to the state for consideration in fiscal year 17. The first component revolves around capital projects. There are 21 projects here that have been reviewed by the operations team and the president. And so we're bringing forth these projects to the state's attention, looking for support. The second category revolves around capital renewal projects. Renewal projects, by definition, addressing existing infrastructure that the university has, where there's some enhancement or replacement that is required. And then the third component revolves around deferred maintenance. Where we've got specific thoughts or specific initiatives that we need to address that just will keep the infrastructure of the university running smoothly. And so the sum total of these three lines that we have included in our fiscal year 17 budget request to the state is $442.7 million rounded.
Historically, what rate of success do we have with the state of funding capital?
Well, this is not unique to CSU. The state has not, in the last several years, put together a capital bill that has been shared in any way across the state agencies. We have been successful in recent memory in getting the state to respond to emergency situations that we've had to deal with. And so, you know, on an isolated incident, we've had success getting funding. This request is really intended to give them an advanced look on how we would spend capital if, in fact, we received it. Mm-hmm. Okay? And so, again, as we operate under the notion of, you know, you can't get what you don't ask for, we bring the request forward and hope that they will consider our projects.
Thank you.
Okay?
Madam Chair?
Yes, sir.
A further response to Trustee Smith's question with regards to the request of, I believe it was 7%.
$7.2 million operating. Yes.
To be quite honest, we could easily ask for three times that. Mm-hmm. We wouldn't, you know, we cannot buy into the craziness of education being continued to be assumed to be underfunded, yeah. And that's part of the norm, and we should just accept it. So we're not buying into the craziness.